Larry Durker is the closest thing you'll get to a lifelong Houston Astro. He signed on with the franchise at age 17 and made his major league debut on his 18th birthday, September 22, 1964. He was the club's first 20-game winner, accomplishing that feat in 1969, the same year he made the first of his two All-Star games. Durker pitched a no-hitter against the Montreal Expos in 1976, would later serve as the Astros' color commentator from 1979 through 1996, and then took over as manager in 1997. He would win three straight division titles and remained in that role through 2001. The unquestioned stars of those Larry Durker-led teams were Craig Biggio and Jeff Bagwell. So there probably isn't a better person to speak about these two career-long Houston Astros, who spent 15 years together as teammates, and are both once again up for election to the Baseball Hall of Fame. In my discussion with Larry, I began asking him if he learned anything new about Biggio and Bagwell in his transition from broadcaster to manager.
Not very much. Basically, everything about them as players was what you see is what you get. You know, I was watching every single game that they played throughout their whole career before I went to the dugout. And, you know, standing around the cage and talking to them before games. And it was pretty clear, you know, they were both highly motivated. They both came ready to play every day and willing to play hurt and play hard and concentrate and focus. You know, they did virtually everything that any manager could ask them to do. I did learn, you know, that they're different kind of personalities. Biggio was more vocal about, you know, what he thought he should do, other people should do, and how the, you know, things would get done. I don't know. He just talked a lot more, and Bagwell was more of the strong, silent type. But that was just a personality thing. As far as what did I learn about them as players, I already knew what kind of players they were. Mm-hmm.
If you could describe the relationship between those two from the time they began playing together in the early 90s until Bagwell's retirement in 2005, often when you have two star players, they can, you know, motivate and push each other to new levels more so than if there was just one star. Was that something you noticed? Because they seemed to complement each other very well with regards to their roles in the lineup.
Yeah, well, it's hard to notice something that's intangible like that. I do think that they took pride in being partners on the left side of the infield. And so the way they worked together, I think, was a source of pride for both of them. And it was obvious if you watched enough games that they got to know each other in their capabilities, such as what kind of range Biggio had when Bagwell could run straight to the bag, and when he had to try to make the play himself and throw to the pitcher, it seemed like they were almost unerring in their judgment. If Bagwell guessed that Bidge could get the ball, Bidge got the ball. If it was a ball he might not have been able to get, Bagwell immediately went for it. So I think there was a synergy there that came from playing so many games together. And I think we got, you know, it was like the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. So we got more out of that first base, second base combination than you could expect to get. And I think if Biggio had stayed behind the plate and not gone to second base, and Bagwell would have played with two or three different second basemen, he may not have known immediately which decision to make. And the same is true for Craig, because of when we traded for Bagwell, he was a third baseman in the minor leagues, and if he'd stayed at third base, then Biggio may have been playing with a number of different first basemen instead of the same guy every time.
You mentioned that trade to get Jeff Bagwell from the Red Sox in 1990 is arguably the best trade in Astros history, especially when you consider he would end up with 449 home runs, would drive in more than 100 runs with regularity, he'd hit for average, he'd win the MVP in 94. I read in a 2005 column that you wrote for the Houston Chronicle, you said, compared with Bagwell, Maytag was undependable, he was the rock on which the Astros house was built. You'd also write, there was no question that Jeffrey Robert Bagwell is the best ball player the Astros have had. Was there a point, maybe in his rookie of the year season of 91 or shortly after, when you knew that he would be a significant player for the franchise?
Well, really not before 1994, because he really didn't become a home run hitter until then. And I knew he was going to be a good player, you know, a good fielding first baseman, a productive hitter, but I didn't know that he would become a prolific power hitter with the RBIs he ultimately got and the all-star caliber play. You know, I knew he was going to be a good player, but I didn't know he was going to be a great player until 94.
2-0 pitch, swinging, there it is! Here comes Auspice. The star is tied. Bidge wants to make it a double, and he's going to be out. He didn't get the trademark, but he did get 3,000 hits. History at Minute Maid Park in downtown Houston. We have the newest member of the 3,000 hit club.
As for Craig Biggio, more than 3,000 hits, 7 All-Star games. He's number one all-time among second basemen in runs scored and doubles. Lest we forget the 285 times he was hit by a pitch. But nonetheless, he was primarily...
He doesn't forget it.
No, I'm sure he doesn't. I'm sure he still has his bruises, right? But, you know, he's primarily known for his batting. However, his fielding, in my mind, is overlooked. Not just the 4 gold gloves he won playing second base, but the fact that he transitioned there from catcher, and he would later play outfield. So when you look at that catcher, second base, outfielder, you know, you can have some people transition from left field to center field, and that's an adjustment, or third base to shortstop. The two transitions he made are incredibly hard. Do you feel that that aspect of his game gets overlooked, especially when considering his Hall of Fame credentials?
I think, you know, it looks like a typo when you see the C there.
Yeah.
You know, how could a guy that's a catcher play middle infield or outfield? And, of course, the answer is that he was extremely fast. He was probably one of the fastest players in the whole league. And he never really did belong behind the plate. He didn't have that great an arm. But once he got out from behind the plate and played second base, where he didn't need to have a real strong arm, his speed gave him the range, his focus and intensity gave him the consistency day after day to make the plays. And it's not hard for me to imagine a guy that played second base the way he played it and had his speed could play the outfield or play any outfield position. When he started in the outfield, he mostly played center field. And most outfielders would tell you that center field is the easiest position to play. And so that combined with the fact that he was playing second base and catcher, he sort of had that up the middle programmed, I guess, into his play before he ever went to center field. The first day that he played there against the Mets, he ran back to the fence and jumped up and caught a ball right at the top of the fence as he slammed into it. That was his very first game. He had the speeds and instincts to play the outfield. Again, you know, that got to the point where you'd like a guy with a stronger throwing arm, but it's not as important in the outfield as it is behind the plate, because you've got infielders that come out and take relays, and they're part of the system of getting the ball back in too. So, you know, I don't think he would have been a gold glove outfielder, but I think he would have been above average if he played in the outfield his whole career. And I just think the only thing that doesn't fit is catcher, and it's a good thing for him and for the Astros and baseball in general that transition was made probably only a third of the way into his career, so he got to play most of his career at positions where he really belonged.
Yeah, they certainly preserved him, so to speak, by taking him from catcher and moving him to second base.
Now,
the 1999 season was an emotional season for the team and you personally, suffering a seizure during a game in June and subsequently going in for brain surgery to remove a blood vessel mass. Fortunately, everything turned out well. We're all happy about that. You returned to the club 1 month later and eventually would win another division title. But in the immediate aftermath, how significant was Craig and Jeff's leadership during that time?
Well, I'm not exactly sure what it was like during the time that I was out. You know, I was I was told not to even go to the ballpark, and so I didn't know what was going on in the locker room. And you know, you may be surprised that most managers don't know very much about what goes on in the locker room, even when they're at the ballpark, because you're mostly in your office or in the coach's locker room or checking with the trainer, and but you're not sitting around and hanging out with the players and learning all of their innermost thoughts and feelings and listening to their conversations. But I think that leadership on any team is probably maybe overrated, and to the extent that I think it's hard to talk somebody into being a better player. It's hard to talk somebody into giving more effort, but when they see a guy go out like they, and this was true of every young player that we had come up after Bagwell and Biggio became established, all they had to do was watch him play for about a week, and that's leadership for me. It's not done by talking; it's your actions that people notice, and they were beyond good. You know, they were ideal in terms of players coming up and watching the way they handle themselves, the way they played. So while I was out, I don't know, I assume they did the same things they did when I was with the team, and I know that they were upset, you know, and disturbed a little bit when I went down with a seizure, and they came to see me in the hospital after the surgery, and you know, they came together, which is, I guess it would be typical. They didn't always go together, you know, they didn't ride the park together or go, you know, around with each other and have lunch and go out after the game and stuff like that. They tended to go their own ways away from the ballpark, but when they came to visit me, they came together, and, you know, I was kind of proud of that.
Unfortunately, there was no World Series championship for either of them to show for their successes. In three straight National League Division Series, your teams had to take on the likes of Maddox, Smoltz, and Glavine in 97 and 99, and then in 98 against the Padres, Kevin Brown at his height and Trevor Hoffman at his best in those short series. That's tough to beat, even for Biggio and Bagwell, who certainly couldn't do it alone. It must also be tough for that to be kind of, in a way, held against them when discussing their chances for Cooperstown, wouldn't you say?
Yes. I don't think you can hold it against anybody that has problems in postseason until they get maybe a couple of hundred at bats. You know, I mean, you could analyze Reggie Jackson, which I did one time when I was broadcasting to see if he actually did play better in October, and as it turned out, he did, but not by as much as you might think, because there were a lot of series where his teams got knocked out in the first round, and he went 1-for-12 or something like that. So you can't just step up your performance because you want to. I know they were motivated. They were trying their best. And, of course, they were going against pitchers who were among the top pitchers in the league. And there may have also been some logic to the fact that not just Bagwell and Biggio, but the Astros in general had difficulty with some of the good pitching in the offseason, and that was because we were basically a home run and base stealing type offense. We didn't hit run much. We didn't bump much. We didn't need to. You know, we were among the top scoring teams in the league year after year, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to go out and start hitting home runs off Glavine and Maddox and Kevin Brown and all these guys, because if you're living on home runs and stolen bases and they don't walk very many guys and they don't allow you to hit very many home runs, it's pretty hard to play the game that we like to play against pitching like that. That said, you know, it's not an excuse on my part, because I certainly feel like I could have done some things differently in those series. And after I left, they got into the series, into the postseason again, and they beat the Braves twice. Both times they went to play the Cardinals, and the first time the Cardinals beat them and went on to the World Series. The second time in 2005, the Astros beat the Cardinals and went on to the World Series. So just because we had difficulty with those pitchers while I was managing doesn't mean that we didn't hit them occasionally, and I knew we did hit them occasionally when I was managing. We just didn't do it in the postseason, and by the time we finally did, you know, Bagwell and Biggio were already, you know, had that monkey on their back because they hadn't done much in the postseason. But and, of course, in 2005, Bagwell was finished by then. His shoulder was just too far gone, so he couldn't do much, but Craig did a little better.
Yeah, 2005 getting to face the White Sox in the World Series and ultimately being swept. But that was obviously, you said, past, it was the end of each of their careers. Craig Biggio, in 2013, his first year of eligibility for the Hall of Fame, got 68.2%. Obviously, 75% needed for entry into the Hall. Last year, he was just two votes shy. All indications and past history shows that he'll probably get in eventually, quite possibly, in this coming election. Bagwell, I read, he called Biggio's exclusion a travesty. What are your feelings, or maybe what would be a word to best describe the fact that he's been passed over twice so far? Is it disappointment and anger, or is it hopeful and optimistic considering past history with voting?
No, I don't have any axe to grind on that. I think the people who vote have their own reasons, and I can't get into their heads and understand why he didn't get it on the first ballot, because I think he should have. But he compares favorably with more than half of the second basemen that are already in the Hall of Fame. And to be honest, Bagwell compares favorably as an offensive player with over half of the first basemen that are in the Hall of Fame, too. So, Jeff, you know, he wasn't a first ballot guy, mostly because he got injured when he was about 35, and so he probably would have hit 100 more home runs and driven in 300 or 400 more runs if he hadn't been hurt, and had that happened, he would have been a first ballot guy. But if you look at his on base percentage, his slugging, his RBIs per at bat, his runs scored per at bat, plus the fact that he was an excellent first baseman and one of the best base runners on the team, certainly the best base running first baseman in the league, I mean, it's all there. He should be in the Hall of Fame too, and I think he eventually will get into the Hall of Fame. But he just didn't amass the totals for home runs and RBIs that some of the other first basemen did. Eddie Murray, for example, if you look at Eddie Murray, he played about 25 years, so you know he's got 600 more RBIs and maybe 100 more home runs or something like that than Bagwell. But if you look at his on-base average, his slugging average, his runs per at-bat, his RBIs per at-bat, he's not even in the same league.
High drive to left field. Bagwell watches it go, and this is number two of the game for him. This went further out toward left center over the 379 side for number 20 and number 400 in his career. 400 homers for Jeff Bagwell.
Now, earlier we were talking about Craig Biggio and round milestone numbers, and start thinking about the Hall of Fame. Obviously, it's a fairly select group when you start talking about 400 home runs, and a big ovation from the fans here in Cincinnati. Not to mention the boys in the dugout.
They are standing and applauding Jeff Bagwell.
And Bagwell has yet to come as close as Biggio in the 4 years he's been on the ballot. And a lot of it maybe is due to the speculation of steroid use and for the mere fact that his best days as a power hitter were in the steroid era. And this is a similar case with Mike Piazza, all the speculation. What would be your response to voters who, if they want to say it, would say they are leaving Bagwell off their respective Hall of Fame ballots due to suspicion of performance-enhancing drug use as opposed to actual facts?
Yeah, well, I don't know. All I can say is walk a mile in my shoes. I know the guys from my era would do what everyone else was doing, and if guys were doing steroids, which it seems like they were, that they probably were pretty well available, and it was, you know, guys that did it were, I guess, feeling like they were doing a little better, or maybe they felt like they had to because the guy they were going against was doing it. And I don't really... I wouldn't consider steroids if I were voting for the Hall of Fame, except to the extent that maybe a guy like Sammy Sosa who only had five good years, and they were right in the middle of that era. Mm-hmm. And the years he had before weren't so good, and the years he had after weren't so good. But, you know, when you look at Bonds and you look at Clemens, although he's certainly not culpable after, you know, his trial and everything, but you look at Palmeiro and, you know, a lot of guys that may not get into the Hall of Fame because they were linked with steroids. And then if you go a step further and just assume that other guys must have because they hit a lot of home runs without even knowing, you know, I think you've gone too far. And so, you know, there may be a couple of guys on specific instances that I would hesitate to vote for if they had Hall of Fame numbers, but in general, I wouldn't let that be a big factor. Mm-hmm.
When you look back at notable figures in Astros history, you take yourself, J.R. Richard, Nolan Ryan, Mike Scott. Many players have made an impact on that franchise, but after 1986 making the NLCS, they couldn't get back to that level. There were threats of moving. Fan attendance was down. It wasn't until Biggio and Bagwell both got to their respective all-star levels together that things started to turn for the better and the team became a consistent contender during their primes. So having been, you know, in the city of Houston for so long and having been involved with this team for so long, how would you rate or rank the impact of Craig Biggio and Jeff Bagwell on the Houston Astros history?
Well, obviously, they're the two best position players that ever played for this franchise. There are some pitchers that played here for a few years that, when you consider the totals of all the teams they played for, would be of the same stature. Nolan certainly would be, and Roger would be. But as far as position players, those are the two guys that that really carried the load for many years. And I would probably say that they're, you know, what they brought to the Astros is very similar to what Earl Campbell brought to the Oilers. You know, he was the best running back in the league, and he drew a crowd. And that's the same thing they did.
So as Larry Durker just pointed out, Craig Biggio and Jeff Bagwell not only are legends in Houston Astros history, but also the city's sports history. The Hall of Fame announcement will come on Tuesday, January 6th, where Biggio, Bagwell, and a host of first ballot nominees, including Pedro Martinez, Randy Johnson, and John Smoltz, will also learn if they get their plaque in Cooperstown. That's all the time we have for now. Thanks so much to Larry Durker for joining us, and same goes to all of you for tuning in. My name is Brian Wright, and this is Baseball As It Was.